office is delighted to be joined by Chengyang Ri, director of the IMF's Asian Pacific Department since 2014. Before that, he was the chief economist at the ADB. And before that, when I had the chance to get to know him, he was the Korean Sherpa for the G20 and led the preparations for his government's G20 2010 Seoul Summit. He has a ton of other distinctions that are too long to get into. So I'm going to turn the floor over to Chengyang. Welcome.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks very much for providing this opportunity to be with OMPIF. And I saw the list of the participants. I'm very honored to see my old friend's name. And then I'm very happy to have an opportunity to learn from the expertise today. I know that you would like to discuss about the Asian forecast and how the recovery process, if there is any, in Asia. But let me say first that this time is quite different. You know, there are lots of uncertainties, and we are basically, the biggest uncertain factor is how soon the vaccine will be developed, for example, and how this epidemic curve will progress. So this is well beyond the IMF traditional area. So I think what we are focusing has a lot of uncertainty, as much as you do. So I hope this use this opportunity to learn from you too. So if I just summarize a few facts about our forecast, in the April spring meeting time, we basically projected growth in Asia in 2020 will be 0%, which is actually the first time Asia has never been has a zero growth experience in the last 60 years when the official data started to be collected. Having said that, I think still our growth forecast is much better than the other region, but still it's a kind of shock. So instead of going through the individual forecast, since you already know it, let me focus on what we have learned after the April forecast release, and then what does it mean for if we do vision soon. So first of all, I think based on the Q1 GDP data, which was released for several Asian countries, we found that our forecast in April is relatively optimistic. So in general, I think we see that we have many reasons to revise downward in general. Specifically, China and Korea, because they are already turned around the corner in the epidemic curve, their Q1 data seems to be consistent with what we have assumed in April. But on the other hand, India, Japan, and many other ASEAN economies, including particularly Philippines, their Q1 data was much worse than we expected. It's mostly because when we made our forecast in April, most Asian countries was in the beginning of the epidemic curve, and they start to introduce the containment measure for precautionary purpose. And at that time, we didn't have enough time to evaluate and assume how long this containment measure will continue. So a good example is Japan. And then now we find that Japan is now having a much longer containment period and much more draconian. And the economic performance in Q was much worse than we expected. So basically, that was our kind of performance after seeing our Q1 numbers. So looking forward, how we are thinking about our forecast for the 2020 in general, there are several factors which make us and force us to revise down further, even in Asia, such as the global slowdown. I think we focus around -7% in European countries, -5.8% in U.S. But now, given that the spread of this virus in Europe and U.S. and many advanced economies, I think there will be a significant focus, a downward revision in advanced economies. That will definitely affect the trade and the financial flows in Asia. That is a major factor. And then after April, I think another important factor is U.S.-China tension, politics and all these things. So that will definitely have a negative impact. And then within even Asia, the period of lockdowns was much longer than we expected. And still, even though Asia introduced precautionally this lockdown period, actually, I find that even though they are starting to lift off some of the restrictions, this recovery process is much slower. The social distancing seems to have a much larger impact than we expected. So those factors are negatively affect our forecast. And definitely a few positive factors too. In March, when we make our forecast, there was a significant capital outflow from the region. But after that, U.S. introduced the Fed swap to Japan, Korea, and Singapore in Asia. And then also they introduced the repo facilities. That definitely helped the liquidity problem in Asia. That actually helps. And then also many Asian economies now from March on introduced more aggressive fiscal packages. So Japan, for example, yesterday introduced another 23% of GDP fiscal packages of stimulus. We'll discuss more about how much is genuine fiscal effect. And India, many ASEAN economies also introduced more aggressive fiscal stimulus packages. That may help. But overall, despite this benign global liquidity and the most stimulus packages, we believe that the slowdown of advanced economies and rather uncertainty on this virus has to make our growth forecast 2020 to be revised down further. How about the recovery process in 2021? That I have to confess there is no clue. First of all, financial markets seem to believe that still the V-shaped recovery seems to be possible. Yes, you know, financial markets much affected by the very benign liquidity conditions globally, and Asia is not an exception. But somehow they believe that asset price seems to believe that somehow vaccine will be developed and there will be a sharp recovery from now on. But within IMF, we are not so sure, because it looks like the scar which is happening now can have a larger, longer-term impact in the recovery. And also, who knows, there can be a second wave of the virus, you know, in Asia and or globally. So no one can make sure that how the recovery process will be, the last of uncertainty. But overall, can Asia still do better in terms of recovery? And then our forecast for the next year can be revised upward. We actually, in the April forecast, if you look at it, we basically assume the recovery process will be faster. For example, for China, we assume 2020, they will grow 1.2%, but 2021, they will grow 9%, kind of V-shaped like a recovery. But on the other hand, we are not so sure at this moment. Technically, we are having a more deep recession. Technically speaking, there is a, you know, recovery growth rate may be higher in the 2021, simply technical reasons. But and then also Asia is less affected than virus, so maybe scar impact will be less in Asia. But on the other hand, as I mentioned, trade will definitely go down. And then, you know, as I mentioned, that there are lots of unemployment problem also in Asia, and that is underemployment, and I say lose of wages of the many peoples. That will probably be harder for the domestic demand increase fast. And then many Asian countries' businesses also depends on the very low quality services like tourism. And then those things will take a long time to recover, even the recovery process started. And then many countries depends on remittance, which is basically depends on international travel. And then another elephant in the room is China-US tension. And then that will affect Asia will be mostly. So I don't think that we can be sure that the V-shaped recovery will be guaranteed in some or likely. So I guess that we are now in the process of revising our growth forecast. So if I just close my remark, let me just mention a few policy issues and some interesting issues that make me hard to sleep during these days. One is in Asia, we have a more self-employed sector. We have a more small and medium enterprises, but actually we have a very informal sector is much larger. Yeah, Africa has more, but in Asia also. Part-time workers, non-regular workers, and the self-employed. That is not well captured on unemployment statistics. But actually, if you look at their working hours drop quite significantly. And their wage drops quite significantly. And they are actually outside of social safety net. So how to protect them? And then also whether this will be one of the factors which hinders the recovery, and what kind of policy we have to do it to address this inequality, rising inequality issue. That's one issue. Definitely a country like Thailand, tourism and future of the tourism is a big issue, even though coronavirus is disappears. And then many trade dependent manufacturing sector, what's going to happen? Global value chain. This is, big issues. That asks us the really important, but we don't know the clear answer, is that whether in this environment, Asia has to do whatever it takes, like advanced economies. That is give a lot of headache to me. You know, now, because the economic slowdown is quite significant, we think that Asian countries has to mobilize fiscal as well as monetary resources. But, you know, Asia, many countries doesn't have international currencies. So if their budget deficit increases significantly, and then given the relative limited fiscal space, how the rating agency will react? Is it going to affect the international capital flows? Those are all questions. Now, because of that, if you look at the policy response of the Asian economies, even though the tax seems to be quite big, actually, if you look at the pure fiscal side, it's very limited size, such as 3 to 4% of GDP, unlike the advanced economies, which is well above 10 to 20% of GDP. And then they are using more central bank. But when you use a central bank, how you can use central bank money without hampering the reputation and the institutional independence that you have actually invested for quite a long time? Those are the issues that we are now talking with authorities, and we need some kind of ingenious, the creative solution for that. These are actually what we are spending a lot of time. Definitely that includes some medium-term debt sustainability issue. So after this stimulus, how we can normalize this situation. That is also a big issue in Asia.
Well, thank you for that. There's obviously a lot on your plate. You mentioned do whatever it takes. So maybe we can just have a thumbnail sketch of individual countries and how the IMF sees them at this time from your region. Why don't we start with China? Many people feel China's been cautious on fiscal and monetary policy response, but the National People's Congress was meeting, and while China abandoned its growth target, there were calls for fiscal stimulus and a more appropriate, prudent monetary policy. So it seems as if China's putting its foot on the accelerator a bit, but still relatively cautious. How do you see China?
I think your description is correct. I think what they learned from 2009 experience is that some kind of large expansion of fiscal and monetary policy at the time, they caused us some unintended consequences. So this time they are very cautious. So one message is that implication is that we cannot expect China will bail out Asia's growth rate, unlike 2009, where at the time, as you remember, 2009, 2010, China's growth rate is still above 9% because they used a large fiscal stimulus, pure fiscal packages, well above 8% in a year. This time, now we believe that what China has in mind is close to 5% of GDP. But initially, it was like a 3% of GDP, given that the slowdown of advanced economies and the increasing trade tension and then increasing political tension with the U.S. Now in the National People's Congress, they have to mention that they are willing to do more stimulus. So that's, we are actually thinking about around 5% of fiscal stimulus package, but PBC actually do much more. Okay. So I think I would say still the policy is accommodative, but whether they will do more old way of investment-led growth, that one I think still they are very cautious. But that may depend on data dependent. If the China economy slow down much more than they expect and we expect, they may use it. But as of now, we see the sign that the China economy is already turning the corner, and that they started this lifting their containment almost 2 months ago. So when I see what's happening is the manufacturing industrial sector is kind of operating well above 70-80%. Many restaurants and the service sectors also operating 70-80%. So actually, it's turning the corner. But from now on, what we are looking at is how the U.S. and Europe's advanced economy is slowing down. What will be the negative impact on that, on their trade? So we think that China's growth rate probably slowed down a little bit than we have expected. But as of now, unless there is a big surprise, at least in 2020, or just China less than the others.
You didn't really say whether you and the IMF are broadly satisfied with the current stance of Chinese policies or whether you would have more accommodation and stimulus.
I think we have to say that so far is okay. So if you think this data depend, it should be data depend, but so far we are very happy to see that they actually refrain from the old way of stimulus packages.
Good. Well, another big country in your region, of course, is Japan. Now, Japan, like the U.S. and Europe and some European countries, has been pretty aggressive, it seems, on fiscal and monetary policy fronts. As you mentioned, there's now apparently another fiscal package. Of course, in Japan, there's a huge stock of debt, low debt service. That has typically weighed on the fund. But I assume your view would be do everything it takes now and come back to consolidation later, but definitely come back to consolidation. Hopefully, I'm not putting words in your mouth. How do you see Japan?
You know that this is that opinion is really divided. And whether, you know, with a debt of a GDP ratio close to 250%, whether you have to still have a fiscal space or not, it's all this controversy that we had. At this moment, our official view is that, as you just mentioned, temporary, targeted, and cyclical fiscal policy needed when economy cool down seriously. But that has to be with a medium-term consolidation plan. So if you look at the stimulus packages, it's quite enormous, actually. You know, they announced about 20% of GDP packages. That includes, that the below and above the line. So it's not a pure fiscal policies, but it includes the loans, guarantee, and other things. And a couple of weeks, months ago, and then this week, they announced another 23% of packages. So it's altogether about 43% of the packages. We believe that their debt over GDP ratio, which is around 235% before the post-coronavirus, but we are expecting their debt over GDP ratio can well above 260%. So it's increasing quite rapidly. But we think that, many people criticize IMF advice for them to increase consumption tax. But actually, even after that, we are expecting things going normal, then from 2021, that of GDP ratio can slightly go down because of tax revenue from the consumption tax is increasing from that time on. So in some sense, that is what we want to. In temporary, you can use some more fiscal stimulus packages, but on the other hand, you have to have some sustainable path. But on the other hand, many people believe that that has a mixed signal, and given this low interest environment, so if you believe that Japan's interest rate will be lower than the growth rate forever, then why you care about 260? It can be even 300. It can go forever, right? But to me, it's kind of hard to, first thing, as an economist, it's very hard to believe that there's no budget constraint. So that's one thing. And the other message, I think that this may be true for Japan and country which can issue international currency.
Let's continue with the region and try some quick thumbnail sketches. India, I've seen Modi had announced a 10% of GDP fiscal plan. Some of the details weren't clear to me. How do you see India right now?
India actually is one country whose growth forecast we are very much criticized in the last couple of weeks. We forecast India growth rate will be 1.9%, which is really significant revision down from the around 6% growth rate previously. But India was suffering from the slowdown of economy even before post-coronavirus because of financial repression, financial market deleveraging. But still people believe when we announced 1.9%, they say, oh, your growth focus is too high. But there is a big confusion. When our 1.9% growth rate is for the fiscal year. So actually, if you recalculate this calendar year, that was like 0.5%. So people, they compared apples and oranges. They're talking about the calendar year. Ours are more fiscal year. So it was not that optimistic. That's my first defense. But having said that, India introduced a very draconian containment measure. And I think that's the right policy because, you know, without controlling the disease, your economy will go down further. But in, compared with the initial announcement that they will repeal these measures probably from the mid-May, now by seeing what's happening in Mumbai, and then, you know, still the, it's stabilizing, but still the, you know, the increase of the virus is quite significant, especially in the area of the Mumbai. So we expect that their containment measure will last a little bit longer. So we that way, I think we have to revise down their growth rate quite significantly from now on. And then I'm happy to see that the India government announced some new stimulus packages. As you mentioned, Modi announced the 10% packages. There, I think that we have to do more studies, but basically, we believe among 10%, around 4% is a central bank stimulus package, such as lending or this. And then around 4 or 5% is a below the line measure, such as you know, guarantee and other activity. And then around 1 or 2% is a pure fiscal measures. And then together with that, you know, there's automatic stabilizer. So tax revenue will go down. That will have an indirectly a stimulus effect. So general government budget deficit increased from 7 to 12%, which is significant. But I think this really shows the some kind of limitation that many emerging markets have. Unlike Japan and many advanced economies, which can do whatever it takes and just increase the fiscal resources enormously, India and many other Asian economies has to be a little more cautious. So in that sense, we believe India still have a room to increase a little more fiscal expenditures and maybe more accommodative monetary policy. But India is a great example that they have to concern what does it mean for the budget deficit, what does it mean for the exchange rate, all these concerns. So I see that it's a good reason to be cautious.
Well, let's move really fast, but let's just hit a few other countries. So a lightning round, as they say. Your home country, Korea.
Korea is turning the corner. Actually, I'm very proud, and they got a lot of credit. They did this containment policy very well and without completely closing down the economic activity. So even though they introduced the lockdown policies, their lockdown policy is completely different from what Europe and the US and many others are doing. I would call this a partial lockdown. Together with testing others, they maintain the economy activities. So recovery in that sense has been fast too. So they turn around the corner. The first economy is, yes, impacted, but seems to be doing better. But from now on is an issue because trade will go down quite significantly. And we see that the April statistic and May statistic really show that trade is going down. So even though domestic consumption and domestic economic activity is now catching up, the trade will go down. So, but as you know, Korea is very heavily dependent on trade. On the other hand, they actually, by Korean standard, Mark, you always emphasize that Korea has a more fiscal space, they have to do more. By that standard, I think they did some large packages, overall packages about 14% of GDP, and then maybe pure fiscal is like 3%. So I think depending on how the economy slows down further, they may have definitely more room to do it. But in Korea, the issue is more structural, how they actually address these aging problems and how they address this trade-dependent manufacturing sector-oriented economy in this environment.
Your region has so many big countries in it, it's kind of hard to cover them quickly. If I gave you one or two more minutes, are there any others you'd like to make a word on? Indonesia, Philippines, just a quick word?
ASEAN overall, Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, I think this time really shows the heterogeneity of this ASEAN country in terms of policy. You'll be surprised that Thailand have issue of, now they have a safe haven effect. So now Thailand is worrying about, yes, tourism is a big issue, so the economy is slowing down. But at the same time, because their external sector is so strong and the actually baht is appreciating, and then they have a safe haven and the interest rate is approaching the zero. So they have a like advanced economy like a problem like in Japan. So how to handle this unconventional policy in that sense is their policy challenges. And then how soon the tourism can recover. That's kind of issue. On the other hand, other ASEAN economies, they still rely on the foreign capital. And Indonesia is a good example, and somehow Malaysia. And so then I think they have to really look at now is much better than March. So as in like India, they have to really think about what should be the optimal mix to the impact on domestic, but also FX market and other things. So that's kind of different challenges. Philippines is also, they are relatively immune. And if you look at it, the foreign investors' position is quite limited. But on the other hand, they have some difficulties in controlling the containment on this thing. So each country has a quite different task. So I find this is unlike the global financial crisis period where the most countries are affected in a very similar way. This coronavirus give a quite different challenge for each ASEAN countries.
So let me just, I have two more questions for you and then I'll turn it over to the floor. The first one you've partially answered, but to come back to it. So Asia's relied upon an export-led growth model in large parts. China has been an assembly hub for global value chains in the region. But between the crisis and U.S.-China tensions now, it seems that there's going to be emphasis on reshoring. Unfortunately, there may be protectionism. There may be more regionalization. Globalization isn't having a good crisis, in my opinion. So this could have really fundamental ramifications for the Asian growth model. And I wonder if you've begun to think about this issue.
Inevitably, when the coronavirus happens, that the anti-sentiment, anti-globalizing sentiment, which has been there already after the global financial crisis, will definitely accelerate, right? Rising inequalities, all these things. But now on top of it, now if you look at the U.S.-China tension, I think I'm sure that the globalization will be hampered, significantly. So Asia needs to be adjusted. So how I really have some concern, for example, it's much easier to say that you have to be more domestic demand oriented. Then you have to rely on your middle income class for domestic consumption. Even China, it's easy to say that they will rely on land growth. But if you think that, now the, as I mentioned, there are lots of informal sector and their wage will go down, the working hours decrease, China and many other Asian economies, where the money will come to boost up the domestic demand. So in the short term, I see this is it will be a big challenge. And Asia has benefited a lot from the trade, and especially trade with advanced economies. But now if this route is closed or limited, can these things make this inter-regional trade will compensate that one? That I don't know. Now the U.S.-China tension and that will probably escalate the regional geopolitical tension too. So that's kind of a very challenging time. And at the same time, when you talk about global value chain, so far we just focus on the manufacturing sector, probably mostly. But after this coronavirus, we see many other sectors, global value chain was kind of, we see that how world integrated, how fragile we are. For example, tourism. I saw that there are a lot of legal suits about how you can refund this tourism money because we find that there are a lot of complex international value chains in the even tourism sector. So how this is going to be changed in the future? And then also medical supply. Now many people, U.S., for example, heavily depends on India and China for basic medical supplies. So those kind of essential food supply is also another big issue these days. So now many countries are thinking that the self-sufficiency in some essential product is important, rightly so. So now there will be a reversing trend.
Well, great. Well, my last question, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you to say something about IMF support in response to the crisis, the financial support in your region. And while I'm asking this question, I'm going to provocatively ask you about a subject you and I've discussed for many years, which is precautionary support in Asia. So you have a lot of strong countries that would be ideal candidates for precautionary support, but no Asian country ever took the FCL, Flexible Credit Line. The fund has just put forward a short-term liquidity line, which has been discussed for many years, but no Asian country has taken it, nor any other country in the world. So even though Asian countries say they need liquidity support and have been strong proponents of more robust global financial safety net, so maybe you can tell me about the IMF financial support for Asia and also tell me why nobody in Asia has taken precautionary support from the fund.
First of all, I think I'm very glad that we finally deliver SLL. And then, you know, even though there is some there's room for improvement, still I want to see more precautionary measures in IMF. So I'm very proud, and then also I'm very glad to see this new instrument. At the same time, as you mentioned, I'm a little bit disappointed that so far no Asian countries still interested in it. But I can understand it because, you know, this insurance, if you want to enroll the insurance during some financial turmoil, that can have a more reputation impact, all these things. So probably who knows when the market situation become more benign, then they may be interested in having some kind of, you know, this insurance mechanism in preparation for the future crisis. But at this moment, I have to admit that still when I talk to the individual countries in Asia, I think partly because they think still they have room to manage themselves through their reserves and their positions. But at the same time, they are worrying about still stigma, mostly from the credit rating agencies or investors when they actually use it. Unlike other reasons, still they are very cautious on that. And then we have some discussion with the credit rating agency, and the credit rating agencies basically say, oh, this is an insurance mechanism. Overall, in net, it will have a positive impact. So we are talking about that, and we're going to inform our member countries that this is less concern. But on the other hand, for investors group, definitely see opinions are very mixed. Some investors say that, okay, having an insurance is okay, but if you actually withdraw it, that shows some sign of the weakness and all this different argument. And some people say, that, oh, that's a macro situation. Having an insurance is a good thing. So I think that probably given the stigma that we have in Asia is much larger than the other region, it will take some time for the authorities to learn about this instrument and also to learn about the potential reaction of the investors and as well as the, you know, credit rating agency. But I think this is a first mover problem. Once one country finds it useful, I hope that we can utilize this one more. To me, I think whether at this moment there is a country or not who is using is a secondary issue. You and I have a long debate and the people have a different opinion, but I believe that the fund, the precautionary instrument, if we make it more effective, which doesn't have a much conditionality, is good for the many Asian economies who can be a victim of, innocent victim of the of global financial crisis. I think that will be very good. If you only have the program which has a lot of ex post conditionality, many countries will come too late. So whether there is users at this moment or not, I think going to the direction of having a more effective precautionary instrument, I think in my opinion is the right direction.
Well, great. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for the fantastic tour d'horizon of the region. And you're undoubtedly a very busy man these days. Thank you very much for that presentation.